This is Talking Points, Kent's politics podcast.
Hello and welcome to Talking Points, Kent's politics podcast. I'm your co-host Oliver Kemp and with me is the KM's political editor Paul Francis. How you doing, Paul?
I'm good, thanks Ollie. And the squeaking chair has made a return as well.
It's back, but what isn't back is my illness. I'm feeling better, so I won't be trying to stifle coughs throughout the episode, which was, I think, pretty painful to listen
and
to last week.
I've avoided eating any digestive biscuits.
Yeah. Or brisket,
as we
discussed. So this week, Paul, we're talking banners, smart motorways and waving goodbye to our MEPs. Lots going on. But first off, this is a pretty historic moment. So we're approaching the Brexit deadline for the final time. I know, it's difficult to believe that we can actually say that now.
It is difficult to believe, but we are inching towards the finishing line, as pundits like me like to say.
We're finally there.
We are finally there, or we will be on Friday.
And obviously one of the offsets of that is the fact that MEPs are out of a job.
Yeah, and you might remember that last year we had elections that no one thought we were going to have, and they were elections for MEPs to the European Parliament because we'd missed other deadlines on delivering Brexit. So we've had a bunch of MEPs from the UK going to Brussels and Strasbourg for the last few months, doing their MPs business stuff, but they're all going to be walking away from the job on Thursday.
Bye, out of a job. Where are these people going to go? What are they going to do?
Well, I've been speaking to quite a few of them in the South East. There's 10 MEPs, and they cross the political spectrum. Don't forget, this is the election which the Brexit Party won after only being kind of around for a matter of a few months. And some of them are going back to their day jobs. Some of them have got no plans at all. One of them is going to buy a puppy. And one of them says he's going to take a holiday. So they're all leaving with some plans or no plans at all.
A puppy. That's an interesting plan.
A puppy, yeah. Yeah. I'll keep that, the identity of the MEP who's going to buy a puppy, out of the public domain for the time being.
As if that's somehow going to betray their character.
Exactly, yes. So, yeah, I mean, and the interesting thing in talking to them was to get them to reflect on what they thought they'd achieved by being an MEP, albeit for just a few months. And it kind of varied, as you'd expect it to. The Conservative MEP, Daniel Hannan, said that, he's done and dusted. He's served 21 years in the European Parliament. And his view is that his job is now done. And he can walk away having, as he says, secured what he came in for, which was to get the UK out of the EU.
I imagine for others that have only been there for a matter of months, it might be quite a difficult pill to swallow at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the parties recognised that it was going to be a short-lived period for them as MEPs. But they've all had to kind of, immerse themselves in this kind of business of attending plenary sessions, being appointed to various committees, hawking all their stuff from Brussels to Strasbourg, which is one of the contentious areas around European Union, European Parliament spending. So they've all had to buy into doing what MEPs are supposed to do, and now they're kind of that's it. It's all going to be over in the next few days.
Can we expect any Paul Francis trips to Brussels at any point?
Well, it's a possibility. We're not sure at the moment, but I mean, the final kind of sort of plenary debate is on Thursday, where there'll be a vote. This is the kind of serious side of it, I suppose, where there'll be a vote which kind of ratifies the UK's departure from the European Union. And, you're not going to have Nigel Farage not getting up on his feet to do a bit of grandstanding after his long campaign to deliver Brexit. So it's a possibility. We're weighing up whether we should go or stay or go.
Go or stay, or go. Even go.
That'll or just a... watch the stream.
You'll watch the stream and comment on it. I mean, that sort of final vote Did anything happen there that's potentially catastrophic that changes the outcome of what's going on?
It's kind of 99.999% recurring that it will all get signed off, barring something major that I can't think of.
Famous last words, Paul.
I know, yes. You should always expect the unexpected, as we found out last year in politics.
Exactly. And so moving on slightly, and another sort of connection to our departure from the EU this week. We talked about Big Ben bonging last week, which was a gift of a headline, and now we have the Battle of the Banners.
Yes, the Big Ben bonging Brexit budget.
Oh, he did it. Five.
Has been a counter movement by the Liberal Democrats in the South East. The Liberal Democrat MEP Anthony Hook came up with this wheeze to adorn the White Cliffs of Dover with a huge banner declaring that the UK still loved EU, and the loved was obviously in a big heart. And on Friday last week, he had a kind of press event whereby he kind of laid out this banner. The interesting thing was that it was only laid out on the White Cliffs. It wasn't a banner that was put up. It was unfurled and put on the ground, so no one could actually see it.
Is that going to be put on the White Cliffs at some point, or is that subject to safety measures?
I think
measures
that's about as far as they're prepared to go. And right. I suppose you could argue that it was quite a good sort of PR stunt. And it, the Conservatives were a little bit miffed, I think, that the Liberal Democrats had stolen a march on them over the EU deadline. So they came up with a rival plan, which was to have a different slogan, saying "We love the UK." And they sort of said they had plans to sort of beam a big image of the logo on the White Cliffs of Dover.
Led by donkey style.
Yes, exactly, yes.
Interesting, okay.
So there were kind of rival PR stunts by the two parties, neither of which added greatly to the debate in terms of what the UK's future is going to be like outside the European Union. But politicians like to get their kind of message across to the media in different ways, and it managed to draw a fair few people up to the White Cliffs of Dover, albeit on a damp, soggy Friday, to see this great barrier. The one thing that I was intrigued about was that they described the banner as being the size of two squash courts.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I don't think people go around sort of measuring things in terms of how they relate to the size of a squash court. Maybe they do.
Well, in my head, I can see the size of a tennis court. I can see the size of a football pitch. But a squash court is slightly more confusing to visualise in the mind.
It's like saying, the comparison is always made, something is the size of Wales. We've got a new way of measurement, and it's something the size of two squash courts in this case.
It doesn't even sound that impressive, does it, to be honest?
And they'd crowdfunded to get the money to buy this banner.
Yeah, it was over £5,000, wasn't it? So.
Yes. Well, some people were questioning whether they got a good deal or not, because you can get banners made up on certain online companies.
Yeah, that is quite a lot of money for a banner, which isn't even going to go
even
on the
actual Even if it is the size of two large squash courts, as if there's different size squash courts, even if it is the size of two squash courts, it still seemed quite a lot of money. And then Anthony Hook was asked what he'd do with the remaining money, which had been crowdfunded, and I don't think he was expecting to be asked this, because he said that they were thinking of taking it on tour to different parts of the country.
Taking
the banner on tour. And,
wow. That's a tour I want to be.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is he's got his name at the bottom of the banner, so it's So yeah, it added a bit of colour, I suppose, to the final countdown.
Well,
you're underwhelmed.
I'm underwhelmed. Book your tickets for the Anthony Not Brexit banner tour on sale now. Maybe we'll do an investigation into that.
Possibly.
How much it costs for a banner the size of two squash courts.
The immediate thought was, if this was taxpayers' money, we'd be busy already, wouldn't we? Sort of, ringing up different suppliers, say, can you do a banner for £100? But yes, it did strike some people as quite a quite a significant sum of money for a banner.
Mm, yes, well.
And especially a banner which wasn't actually put up, but it was laid down.
Yeah, maybe they should lay the projected, potential projected Conservative image down by the side of it as well. We won't have anything on the White Cliffs.
So that's the Battle of the Banners.
Very exciting. Yeah. Very exciting stuff.
Talking Points, Ken's Politics Podcast.
Smart motorways. This is something I feel like we need to talk about. Are they a bit dangerous? So it was revealed that 38 people have been killed on the new smart motorways road scheme in the past 5 years across the country. And now the very expensive scheme could be changed. And obviously we have some smart motorway in Kent, don't we?
We
have
do.
A section of the M20 and part of the M25. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
So, I mean, what could we see changing here? What's going to happen?
Well, I mean, the arguments about the safety of these schemes have been going on quite a long time, and Tracy Crouch, the Chatham and Aylesford MP, has been raising in Parliament whenever she can the concerns of her constituents about the safety of these schemes. You know, it's tempting to say they're kind of less safe than the contraflow that was in place along the M20 when we had Operation Brock on standby. But the serious point is that, you know, for any motorist, the idea that you're travelling along a road and you break down and you would ordinarily go onto a hard shoulder and be kind of, you know, relatively safe in that respect. Now, if you break down on a smart motorway scheme, your vehicle is right in the line of traffic behind you. And a lot of the incidents and unfortunate fatalities have occurred in just this way. So there are, you know, it seems a bit mad to say people have only just started realising there may be safety issues around this. But it's now, I think, being accepted by the government that there may be a need to review how these schemes operate. And the Transport Secretary, Grant Shapps, is apparently saying that he wants further assurances about mitigating measures around the smart motorway schemes that will not endanger motorists' lives.
But these schemes have been being implemented slowly for years now with a lot of public money.
Yes.
The answer, supposedly by the government, the answer to traffic woes on some of the largest roads in the country. And now you could be looking at potentially changing that. But what I think might be confusing to some people is you look at this and you look at the fact that there is no hard shoulder, and it seems quite clearly obvious that there would be a safety issue there. So is there a government response on why not having a hard shoulder is okay?
Well,
on a smart motorway,
some of the early schemes had lots of CCTV cameras. I think it's the one in Birmingham that had lots of kind of escape lay-bys in them. Not lots, but at regular intervals along the stretch of the smart motorway scheme had kind of lay-bys which you could pull into. But that's not the case in all the schemes, and I think the government is concerned that the figures that have come out do indicate that there is a real concern about making sure these schemes aren't endangering lives unnecessarily. But what the solution is to that and what improvements can be made is another matter,
which could potentially go on for a long time.
And there's huge amounts of public money being spent on these schemes. The one along the M20, I think, is £92 million worth of money. So there's lots of taxpayers' money going onto these schemes, and the government doesn't want to be in a position where it is having to defend schemes that cost so much, but which ultimately are causing lots of accidents and, in some cases, unfortunately, deaths.
Yeah, and I mean, that makes the M20 even more of a hotspot, bearing in mind we've talked numerous times on this podcast about Operation Brock and it being now removed, and then what potentially could come with that if they decide that smart motorways need a rethink. That's a hell of a lot of work on one road, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't bear thinking about that, does it?
Operation People's Brock, to work is going to get a lot
Operation
worse.
Brock and smart motorway, yes, it's not a good... not a good proposition, is it?
No. I guess we'll keep on following that one and see the developments that come up. I mean, the other story that I think is worth us talking about, which is again a transport story, So a heavy week of transport news.
Yeah.
And it's been a week where a lot of the national conversation has been focused on whether the rail network in the north, so HS2, should still go ahead, bearing in mind the potential effects to communities that could happen. The building an infrastructure for such a large railway scheme is gonna change things, change the map in some ways of certain areas of the country. Ashford MP has spoken out against our more local rail network, which is HS1, which has obviously been around for a very long time. Tell us a bit about that, Paul.
Yeah, well, as you say, there's been a big debate going on about High Speed 2, but the focus in Kent has always been High Speed 1, and the Ashford MP, Damien Green, raised the issue of High Speed 1 service in the Commons last week, and his point actually was that, not that the service was bad, but the service was good, and perhaps was too good because so many people wanted to use it. It was leading to overcrowded trains. And when you factor in the cost, the eye-wateringly high cost of commuter season tickets from Ashford and other parts of Kent, there comes a point where customers might not feel that they're getting particular value for money. So the Ashford MP, Damien Green, alongside a handful of other Kent MPs, had a debate in Westminster about this, and I don't know how he got to these figures, but to underline the concerns about overcrowding, he'd extrapolated some data which suggested that I think it was in the next 5 years or so, the capacity would be so overloaded that actually you wouldn't be, some people wouldn't be able to get on a kind of a commuter train during the kind of commuter rush hours to and from London. So he's advocating more investment in rolling stock.
I was going to say, hold on, jargon
alert. Come,
Paul,
yeah.
What does that mean?
Change with more carriages, basically.
Ah, okay. But do you know what? It's funny. I saw some articles about it, and I saw the phrase rolling stock and thought I need to bring that one up with Paul.
Yeah, well, there
have
you
a discussion about what rolling stock actually means.
I've fallen into the elephant trap of using jargon myself.
No.
So, yeah, But, I mean, the difficulty for the government is that they're in the middle or they're awaiting the publication of this review called the Williams Review, which is going to effectively say the current franchising model for running railways, rail services in the UK is busted, basically, and an alternative is needed. And it was interesting to hear the Transport Minister, Chris Heaton-Harris, who was, you know, responding to the MP's concerns about overcrowding, saying that it was a very timely intervention. When ministers say it's a very timely intervention, they're probably playing for a bit of time themselves. But he was saying we'll have to wait for the Williams Review to come out before, you know, deciding which way to go in terms of a different model. Now, I don't think the government is going to buy into Labour's position on renationalisation, but privatisation. Is not always seen as a good thing. So I think the government is going to have a bit of a problem coming up with a kind of proposition for running the rail services in Kent, which is going to kind of sort of fall between those two stools in terms of not being privatised but not being nationalised either.
Yeah, this is, I mean, what's something I wanted to ask you based around this question. You know, that is so against the current government's position ideologically, is, you know, to go and nationalize like a rail franchise. So that would be a massive deal to take it to that route. But, you know, there must come a point where you think, what else can we do? Can we further privatize, or are we going to see increased fares? We're going to see,
I think the issue in relation to overcrowding goes directly to this dilemma that the government's got. You know, does it want to kind of introduce some form of kind of additional state aid for the railways that, you know, will enable would-be operators to put on more trains with more carriages, because that really is the issue in Kent for the High Speed 1 service, and do it in a way which doesn't look like it's renationalising the whole network. So it's a wait and see situation, I think, on this front.
Yeah.
Although not waiting quite as long as some people do for their trains to arrive.
Yeah, we'll definitely follow that one with interest and see how the current government are going to either step over that one or, as you say, repackage it to not seem like it's...
I think the fact that they've got the Williams Review coming out in the near, not too distant future, they're using that as a kind of say, well, we'll have to wait to find out what the Williams Review says about franchising. But franchising has been around for quite a long time now, and maybe it is time for a fresh look at it.
set your alarms for the Williams franchise release. That's what I say, guys. So one more thing, which we do every single week, is Paul's jargon of the week. And this week, it's a phrase, because you can't stick to the jargon word idea. Not as bad as a sentence.
There's nothing wrong with a jargon phrase.
No, sure. But we should have just never called it jargon word of the week, because it's very rarely a single word. Yeah. This week is just transition.
Just transition, yeah. We were talking earlier about this. It sounds like some prog rock concept. Album maybe, or even a band called Just Transition.
So it's an old Genesis B-side record,
But it's it's timely, as ministers would say, because it's taken from something which the MEPs have agreed in the European Parliament, and that is to do with tackling the climate change crisis and the environmental focus. And one of the problems that MEPs have sort of brought up is the fact that when the fossil-based fuel industries kind of decline, shrink to make way for more kind of renewable energy sources, there will undoubtedly be lots of people losing their jobs, unfortunately. And so MEPs have pushed through a plan for a scheme which allows those sectors who will shrink to offer some kind of cushion of support, financial support for employees who, you know, through no fault of their own, are kind of, you know, out of work as a result of the shift towards renewable energy sources. So it's quite a topical and, to be fair, quite a serious issue.
Yeah, it's not light and fluffy for
No. So we'll throw in the odd serious jargon phrase, and that comes under that category.
But just as in sort of morally just, then it's just that are required, you know, need to be.
Yes, I think
it
does. It has a kind of got a moral kind of underpinning. You know, it's not just this or just that. It's just, you know, it's a just scheme. You know, and we. And one of the MEPs I was talking to from the South, he said, you know, it was something which should have been done when the kind of mining industry in the UK went into decline. And they've learned from the mistakes made at that time when the kind of industry was just left to wither on the vine. And, you know, obviously everyone knows that, you know, the climate crisis is top of the kind of agenda. So we are going to see a decline in those kind of other forms of energy production.
Well, now if you see Just Transition, you're gonna know what it means.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening to Talking Points once again. I'm Oliver Kemp, this has been Paul Francis, and we will see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Talking Points, Kent's politics podcast.